Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Quite obviously, Nick Cook's search for Zero Point has led him in many, many esoteric areas. So your range of questions could go just about anywhere. That's what we're doing. You and Nick Cook coming right up. Stay right there. Once again, all the way from Great Britain, here is Nick Cook. Nick, welcome back. Surely there are some things you can tell us about your new book, some give us an idea of direction, where you would go from the hunt.
Sure. Well, as I said earlier, this past couple of years has just really been this amazing kind of ride, and I found myself kind of caught in this kind of roller coaster, which has taken me to all these wonderful and exotic places that I really never expected to go before I wrote the book. So to a degree, the format of the first book will certainly be continued. It will be very much my personal journey, the places that I have visited, the places that I'm able to take the reader to that are perhaps beyond their most people's, I'm very fortunate doing what I do, which is working on the edges of the aerospace and defense industry, to go to some very strange and exotic places.
Yeah, it opens a lot of doors.
And it does. And that journey goes on, and there'll be more of that in the second book. But there were two fundamental questions which were left unanswered at the end of the first book, and those need to be answered when I write the second.
Right.
The first was, show me a zero-point energy device that works.
That's right.
Well, I've seen that. Okay, so that's... I can't go into it in any great depth. Because that's gonna have to wait for the book.
I mean, are you really convinced you have seen that?
Yes, I am. The one that I have seen passes muster. This thing is generating usable amounts of electricity in a low output form at first, but I have no doubt that it will continue to develop greater amounts of useful power, but certainly enough at the moment to power a laptop indefinitely.
Can you tell us if this has come out of the UK or the United States or somewhere else in the world?
I can't, because for the moment I have sworn to the individual that I'm going to maintain a discreet silence on it, but we have agreed that the workings of the device can be and will be detailed in the book. So I hate this to be a tease, but that was one of the fundamental questions that I needed to have answered.
Oh, that's a good one.
Before I wrote a second book.
That's a good one. And the other one?
The other one is seeing an anti-gravity device.
And?
Now, I haven't done that yet, but I believe that there are two or three candidates out there that are currently in the hardware development and demonstration, or about to be coming up to the demonstration phase, which I am hopeful at least one of them will demonstrate to me that visible effects, anti-gravitational effects, are out there and possible to see.
Okay. I've had for years now Dr. Stephen Greer on my program. He's been on an intense search for the same sort of thing that you have, Nick. And I wonder if you two have run either into each other or no doubt many of the same people in this journey.
I know that we've run into some of the same people. I haven't run into Stephen Greer personally. I'm more than familiar with his work, and in both this field and in the UFO field, the disclosure field. But no, I haven't come across, we haven't bumped into each other personally, but you know, I'm hopeful that will happen one of these days.
All right, let's go back to the lines. First time caller line, you're on the air with Nick Cook. Good morning.
Good morning. Art, I want to tell you, I think you're one of the most significant radio shows ever.
Thank you. I agree. It is a significant program.
And Nick, this is a very interesting subject, and I wanted to know what you guys thought about how this might relate to the intense geomagnetic storm that happened last night. If in any way, I got home last night, I looked up into the sky, and it was one of the most intense aurora borealis that I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I don't know that. Maybe it does in some way relate. I really don't know. Nick, we are having an intense geomagnetic storm. Last night, at about this time, it was really raging, unbelievably. I don't know that there's really any direct connection to your work, but I suppose the geomagnetic field is loosely connected to it all in some way, perhaps, huh?
Well, I wish I knew, to be honest. Whereabouts are you? Where is this geomagnetic storm going on?
Oh, well, Nick, it's going on all over the world. That caller was probably in more of the northern latitudes, but, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, we had a pink sky here down in the desert. I'm rather south, as it were. And so it was a worldwide event. The sun really let loose with a full coronal discharge, and it was earthbound directly and hit our magnetosphere, and we had quite a display of lights and so forth. So it's a loose connection.
Yeah, I mean, I've witnessed the aurora borealis up in Canada, and it's a fantastic sight. To be honest, I don't know how this would link in, if at all, to the main area of my research, except, of course, that, you know, we do know through programs like HARP, the atmospheric experiment that the DOD has been conducting up in Alaska, that manipulations of the ionosphere are possible.
Oh yes. Have you looked much into HARP, by the way?
Not extensively. No, I haven't. But you know, it to me, it's symptomatic of what we discussed earlier, which is that the DOD is interested in what would previously have been described as exotic science to gain transformational leaps, quantum leaps in capability beyond where we are at the moment.
There's no question about it, and you might look into HARP, Nick. You really might take the time, and that might be one door you could get partially unlocked. But it's an absolutely fascinating experiment they're doing up there, and you might look into whether they'd let you in that door at all.
Yeah, well, I might just make that application out and see where it goes.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nick Cook. Hi.
Hello. Nick, you may know be my another name. I wrote the Space Daily piece as the Air Force Enemy of Space and the Sudan Publius Rex while I railed against John Jumper, so be on the lookout for an email from me. There seems to be two schools of levitation out there, two camps. You've got your Larry Smalley / Ning Li spinning death school and the Ventura lifter folks. And I know of one individual at the Marshall Space Flight Center I think would like to speak to you, so be on the lookout for an email from Publius Rex. I have one concern. I think that rocketry research may be undermined if all this turns out to be an illusion. Besides, a true zero-G environment with no electronic signature might be best. If you tried to, say, grow a graph plating in an artificial zero-G environment generated by other graph plates, it might be like holding a mic up to a speaker. You just get feedback and tainted results. So hopefully we won't use this to undermine heavy-lift rocketry research, especially now that they're going to be building both EELVs up here in Decatur my way. It's like they're going to be building both the Atlas V EELV and the Delta IV up in Decatur. I think what's really sad is that it seems like we've been distracted on jet airplanes like this $200 billion Joint Strike Fighter fiasco for so long.
But, caller, the fact that they've pulled back so hard on heavy rocketry might indicate to you that they know there's something else afoot, eh?
Well, either that or they could be fooling themselves, or they've stumbled onto something that, like I said, it's something that you might have a small effect, but if you wanted to build, you know, a true zero-G research lab in a natural zero-G setting, you would have something where you could actually grow graft plates, where if you tried to have a graft plate and grow other ones, it'd be like holding a mic up to a feedback loop. I just hope we don't undermine our heavy lift rocketry research, especially seeing both Boeing's sea launch and the Lockheed Martin Atlas V use engines that wound up, you know, that started off being used on the Inner Gear Baron space shuttle.
All right, well, let's talk to Nick about that a little bit. Nick, we are sort of pulling back. I mean, in the heavy rocketry category, could that be because we know we're on the verge of something that will eclipse all of that? I understand this gentleman was no doubt concerned about jobs in that industry and all the rest of it, but could it be we're on to something else?
No, I think we need to be very clear about what's happening here. Certainly in the white world, what we are seeing in terms of manifested effects is at a very early and rudimentary stage. This is stuff that's going on in a laboratory, and certainly in terms of applying that, if indeed we get to points where we can get usable amounts of force field from these devices, is a considerable way off. I don't even want to go into the kind of whole black world arena, because if it is in the black world, then it's compartmentalized and secured away so tightly that we're not going to see that for decades to come. But with these things that people like Dr. Ning Li and Pod Kletnov are doing in the laboratory, how they get applied to weaponry, or indeed more applicably to spacecraft of any description, is some considerable way down the pike. So we need to continue developing what I call conventional technologies.
Nick, how hard have you tried to find her?
I've tried pretty hard, and I know some people who've done some research for me and for themselves who've tried even harder, and they are just getting a serious, serious blank. So if she's listening, if she's out there, I wish she'd register on the website, www.highfrontiers.co.uk, and I will I'll be the first person who'd like to talk to her.
What do you imagine might have become of her?
Well, of course, you know, it would be very convenient to say that she's made a breakthrough, and that the breakthrough is so stunning that her work went immediately classified. But certainly, given the direction of her talks, the fact that she was saying when I interviewed her that she was poised to develop a device which would generate 11 kilowatts of energy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you know, it's a pretty significant breakthrough. And if she was on the verge of it and achieved it, because of the truly out there nature of that breakthrough, it would be transformational. It would be a quantum leap. It would not surprise me if that were suddenly shut down into the realms of classified activity. But, you know, one needs to be careful about this stuff, because she might just have dropped out for a completely different reason, which is maybe she's got family problems or she doesn't want to involve herself in this research anymore.
Mm.
But it certainly looks, given all that interest and the money that was being invested in her by the U.S. military, by the U.S. Army, it seems kind of odd that she's just dropped off the face of the earth.
Kind of odd indeed. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nick Cook. Hi.
Oh, you don't know what a thrill this is, aren't Nick Cook? First of all, I got a comment on what you were talking about on the Philadelphia experiment, and then a question, and then I'll get off and listen on the air.
Sure.
My father worked at the Philadelphia Naval Yard through the entire Second World War, and towards the end of the war, when those so-called Philadelphia experiments were going on, he came home one night and suddenly announced that he had quit his job at the Naval Yard. He was white as a sheet, and he just told my mother and us four boys that he quit because he looked forward and thought he was going to be laid off as soon as the war was over. And then I myself spent 27 years in the Air Force, and I was in Spain, and here comes the question on his anti-gravity and going back to the past for the answers. I went to Segovia in Spain, and they had an aqueduct 4.5 miles up into the mountains, each stone sitting on top of one another with no cement or anything else, weighing about a ton apiece, 800 feet in the air, that was built, they said, in 500 B.C. Now, I can see personally, and I've been in a quandary ever since I saw that amazing thing, which is still being used, as to how, other than anti-gravity, finding a way to have anti-gravity, how they could build such a structure, bringing water from 4.5 miles up into the mountains, down into the town of Segovia, without having had the answer to anti-gravity.
Well, I wish I knew. I mean, the short answer is, of course, there are many places in the ancient world where you see that kind of ability to construct those edifices reflected. I mean, you see them in South America, you see them in ancient Egypt, you see them, well, Segovia in Spain is a new one on me, but you see them all around the world. I don't know enough about it to be able to say definitively that they tapped into some knowledge which we don't have access to routinely anymore.
It was astonishing. It looked like it was built yesterday. The stones were as white as could be from the day, I guess, they were put up. And the other thing is, I almost forgot, my father would never talk about the real reason that he quit working as a supervisor of building ships in the Philadelphia Naval Yard.
All right, well, there you are. Then, of course, there's also the Coral Castle. There are many things that are just inexplicable that have happened in the past that would seem to suggest that some technology was known or understood that's been forgotten or is very black today.
Yeah, I think that is true. I mean, there are undeniably things in the black world which are quantum leap gains over where we are today. They may not be in fields as radical as the ones that we are talking about to be deemed worthy of ultra classification. I mean, you know, one that I've been looking into recently, and which I hope underpins what an earlier caller was saying about how, you know, we really need to be very careful about pursuing these technologies in parallel. But I've been looking into hypersonics, you know, the ability of aircraft to fly at speeds in excess of Mach 5. That work is going on now faster and in more depth than at any period in U.S. military developmental history.
Really?
Absolutely. There is a surge of activity now in hypersonics. That's, in fact, there are white world demonstrations planned to get a hypersonic cruise vehicle flying within about 8 years. But there are enormous technical challenges involved in that. I mean, we tend to blithely say, oh, you know, a plane like Aurora must have flown because...
I was just about to mention Aurora. So
yeah, well, you know, I'm a believer in Aurora in the sense that something was tested and flown. I don't think that it was put into long-term operational service, but I've seen enough evidence to think and believe that some kind of capability was tested, and I think it was put up there for a short while. The concept was validated, and it was then kind of boxed away and mothballed when satellites were shown to be able to do the job more cheaply, because of course, particularly in today's era of more constrained budgets, that sort of activity is really frowned upon. You know, overlapping activity when you've got satellites to do the job just as well.
Yes, but speaking of aircraft and invisibility, do you know of any work going on to make aircraft invisible?
To the human eye?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Definitely. I've spoken to people in the Air Force about past experiments in that area. There are a number of ways of achieving it. Boeing, interestingly, flew an aircraft during the 1990s, which they called the Bird of Prey, out there at Area 51.
Yes.
And the Bird of Prey was an extremely unusual-looking aircraft. And part of the rationale for making its shape very distinct was to fool the human eye into thinking that you were looking at something else. Now, there are other ways of achieving optical invisibility, and certainly this is one that I've been told about by Air Force insiders. is that you coat your aircraft with a kind of a polychromatic film, which has sensors embedded in it, as well as the electrical devices which are able to change the color of the skin to mimic the background. Either if you're looking from below, it will mimic the sky background. If
chameleon, you're above, like, actually. Hold tight. We'll be right back.
Trees swaying in the summer breeze, showing off their silver leaves as we walk soft. Kisses on a summer's day, laughing all our cares away, just you and I. Sweet, sleepy warm of summer nights, gazing at the distant lights in the starry sky.
The way it's going to happen with Zero Point is just going to happen. If it hasn't already, trust me, one of these days it will. That's what our guest is talking about, the hunt for Zero Point. His name is Nick Cook. If you'd like a word with him, here's how you do it.
To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and Nick Cook. Good morning, everybody. Final segment coming up, so if you've got a question, now's the time. Once again, my guest from Great Britain, Nick Cook. Nick, I get these wonderful little computer messages as we go zooming along in the program, and Glenn in Seattle, Washington asks Art, as Nick, if he's heard any rumblings on advances in the field of teleportation. I'm sure he's had his ear to the ground in search of anti-gravity and may have stumbled across something interesting in the field of teleportation. What about it, Nick?
Well, teleportation did hit the news recently. A friend of mine, a guy I know quite well, called Dr. Eric Davis, wrote a teleportation study for the U.S. Air Force and published this towards the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it caused a great deal of furor in the business. I mean, for a start, people were wondering why the Air Force might be funding research into the teleportation arena. You know, connotations of Star Trek and the beam me up and down Scotty,
of course,
device. But Eric is a very serious and credentialed scientist, and actually, as I understand it, his paper went more into the kind of, it was more like a kind of remote viewing aspect of teleportation. In other words, it was kind of talking about bilocality, how you can be in one place physically, but you can psychically, I suppose, for want of a better term, view your surroundings in a remote location. So it was that aspect, really, of teleportation that Eric was addressing. But the fact that the Air Force is, you know, funding this stuff to the tune of, I don't know, $200,000 maybe, shows that people out there, it's what I'm saying really all along, is that people are looking in the government and in the military for unconventional solutions to today's rather unconventional threats and problems. So they're looking to gain those kinds of edges from wherever they can in the science community. And if there's a breakthrough to be had, then these guys want to go out and get it.
Gotcha. First time caller line. You're on the air with Nick Cook. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Nick. Quickly, I would like to get your point of view on something. I work in the aerospace industry, specifically with helicopter company. And I noticed in the NASA budget just recently, they've reduced, almost eliminated, the NASA Ames research when it comes to rotorcraft technology, specifically blade design. And since you've been talking about levitation technologies this morning, I was wondering what your views are of this cutback in resources for this part of the industry.
Well, I think that, I know that there is tremendous competition for what is increasingly becoming a scant and not in the days of the Cold War, you had a pretty much limitless R&D budget. Nowadays, of course, there is immense competition for all the many areas of research that the aerospace industry and the Air Force and NASA behind them have to undertake. I don't know the reasons for cutbacks in helicopter blade technology, but I can imagine that it's probably fallen foul to some priority in another area. I mean, for instance, I mentioned earlier that what the U.S. Air Force and NASA and others now are looking at in great depth is investing more money in hypersonics, speed regimes in excess of Mach 5. Now, you can't get those kinds of gains, which are incredibly difficult to master technologically without robbing from another part of the research and development budget. And so I imagine that that is what has happened here. It's not that what is being done at NASA Ames there is not a priority. It's just that something else has surfaced which is a greater priority, and funds have to be allocated to that.
Yeah, I kind of thought that since you're talking about all this new technology, I just believe in some manner that our government has a big hand in this type of development. I was just, I just thought it was a curious current now that you've been talking about this type of technology. But thank you for your reply.
You're very welcome. Thank you for calling. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Nick Cook. Good morning.
Hello. Yeah, Nick.
Hi. Good morning.
Yeah. You know, a lot of things were created by the garages and stuff like that of, Apple computer and, Microsoft started from nothing, stuff like that. Basically, have you ever heard of what is called the floating bed?
I can't say I have.
Okay, that was basically created up in 1939 in Canada, and it does exactly what you're looking for.
You're saying it levitates.
It definitely levitates.
And is it still demonstrable today?
Yes.
I tell you what, if you want to register onto my my website, www.highfrontiers.co.uk, and register your name, I will get back to you, and we can have this discussion about this technology, because I'd really like to know more about it.
All right. There you have it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nick Cook. Good morning. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I got beat there just the last second. Good morning, gentlemen. Great show.
Thank you.
The question I have for Mr. Cook is if he's ever investigated or done any research into the gravitational propulsion like sites on Google or whatever, and if he has he found anything that seems viable? However, after that last caller, I think we got the answer.
Well, I wish it were, good morning, by the way, I wish it were as simple as that. What I've found when I've done my research on Google and elsewhere is that there are a lot of very bold claims out there. People say that they've got a theory, or people say they've developed something. The difficulty, of course, is transcending this into firmly documented evidence. And for me, the ultimate litmus test, the acid test of all of this, is to be able to see something that flies. I've seen a lifter fly, but as we discussed earlier in the program, it is highly debatable whether that is a pure anti-gravitational effect. I suspect not, sadly. However, they are very dramatic to watch. What I want to see, and what I hope to be able to see certainly this year, I'm monitoring a number of very interesting projects out there, is something which defies the laws of gravity, certainly, and maybe even the laws of physics as we understand them, in the form of an experiment. And it's that demonstrable proof that is so elusive in this game. But I think it's out there. I think it's coming. I think it's ultimately a very hopeful message. So, you know, I'm convinced in the not too distant future, we will see something that's demonstrable and that works.
Thank you very much, Jance. It was a great show.
You're very welcome. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nick Cook. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Hi, Art. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
This is William from Portland.
Yes.
I was wondering, even though Art grounds out the unwanted voltage from his antenna, could it be hooked up as a power source? And if so, would the power output be constant, and would it increase with a greater length of wire?
I don't know. Those are all really good questions, and I don't have the answer to them, particularly with reference to the amount of current available. I don't have that answer yet, although you can bet we're going to investigate. So I would think that it's all a matter of scale, and if my 5 acres of wire is picking up that kind of voltage, then one would imagine higher and longer wires would pick up yet more. I don't know. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Nick Cook. Hi.
Hey, Art. You have a fantastic radio show.
Thank you.
Great. Mr. Cook, have you ever met Thomas Berden, and what do you think of his work, and what do you think of his MEG?
I haven't met Tom Berden, but we have been in some dialogue over the years. As you may or may not know, I mention Tom Berden's MEG at the end of the Hunt for Zero Point. The significance of it at the time I wrote about the MEG was that the U.S. Patent Office had just accepted a patent application on it. And as I'm sure you know, the Patent Office is very leery about accepting patents on devices that are either so-called free energy devices or perpetual motion machines. So the mere fact that they accepted that patent for Tom Bearden's MEG device struck me as extremely significant. The pity is that since then we haven't seen any commercially derived hardware stemming from that theoretical breakthrough. I hope that it's coming. I understand that it's been bogged down as much by commercial differences between the partners involved in that venture. But I'm certainly involved in discussions with people like Tom who have developed similar devices. So I know that they're out there, and I think Tom Bearden's doing great work. And I hope, you know, that his MEG achieves the success that it deserves.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nick Cook. Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Hello.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, this is Vito from Roseville, Michigan.
Yes.
Yes, sir. A few years ago, when the Russians put their first spaceship up there, the very, very first one, the Sputnik, I worked for an engineering company. We were doing work for the tank arsenal, and a bunch of the engineers and I were all talking about it, and I mentioned to them, I said that if you have a copper coil around the spaceship as it passed through the magnetic field of the Earth, you would generate electricity.
Much like a motor, yes.
And I think that's the same principle that maybe Tesla had if he had the high towers up in the air, the same reason why Art's getting electricity from his towers.
I don't know. That may well be. Again, Nick, is this an area that you've looked into?
Well, you know, I always feel I have to stick within my area of expertise, and that's certainly not one of them. I find, you know, clearly that the amount of responses you're getting about this shows that it's a subject of great interest to everyone. I think it's peripheral, really, to what to where my investigations are going. But I'll certainly be monitoring the website to see if anyone comes up with any solutions to your problem there, Art.
Well, it's not a problem in that I have solved it. My radio equipment is safe, but it is something that I feel deserves to be explained. And,
yes.
You know, who knows if something like this really has potential, but it is energy, and it's not discernible where it's coming from. So that makes it interesting. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello there.
Hi. You're on the air with Nick Cook. Welcome.
Oh, good. I was curious about some images I've been seeing for some time now, and I've noticed on Nick's website he's actually using one of them. And it's these World War II Nazi UFO images. And I was just wondering, I've never been able to find out if they've been debunked or if these are considered valid.
Hmm. Well, I'm intrigued because I don't think that's my website, because my website...
American Anti-Gravity?
Oh, that's not mine. No, that's
not yours.
That's somebody else's. But they do very generously give me quite the book, The Hunt for Zero Point, quite a big plug. So I'm very grateful to American Anti-Gravity.
Oh, I see. Okay.
They do very good work, and it's a very good website.
Have you seen?
What do I think about?
There's some that are
UFO
quite large, sitting by a house.
Oh, one at a time.
There's some that are there's pictures of these big saucers sitting by a house with from a distance. They're pretty amazing, and some of them are flying, and I've seen them around, and I've never been able to find out if they've been validated or not.
All right, well, that's always a question with UFOs.
I do go into that in the book in some depth. It's a bit like the Philadelphia experiment. There is a lot of smoke surrounding that particular fire, but when I did the digging, fully expecting not to find anything, I was encouraged to find that there were some very secret activities underway during the Nazi period, during the war, funded by the SS, not the mainstream armed forces, which were looking into power plants that could have propelled disc-shaped craft. Now, where are these disc-shaped craft? Well, funnily enough, actually, I do know a guy at the moment who is doing some quite interesting digging into former top secret Nazi research sites in the Czech Republic, who is hopeful of finding some interesting technology down there. He's also actually looking to raise funding for his dig, so if anyone wants to get involved in that venture, again, log on to my website, register your interest, and I can put them in touch with this guy who's really done some great work, actually, in validating a lot of this very top secret work into German advanced propulsion techniques.
I'm very interested in that. If you get a call from somebody, Nick, who says they've got the Holy Grail, and you become sufficiently, I don't know, convinced by evidence tossed at you by whatever means, email or however you're lured in, do you actually get in an airplane, travel, and look at devices? And how many times have you done that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've done that. And I wouldn't dream of putting anything in the book or in the new book that I hadn't actually personally gone out and validated face-to-face myself. Of course, what you have to do is there's so much information out there and so many people. You know, I'm delighted that so many people have got in touch with me, but of course I can't follow up every lead physically. So I employ the filter. I find out which inquiries are based on, first of all, theoretical advances, which are based on hardware. And it's really the hardware stuff that I'm interested in, because anyone can talk up a theory. What we need to do is see hardware that works. And I think, actually, Art, that what will happen is, because this is so out there, it's so on the edge, that people tend to be or seem to be developing, certainly in the zero-point energy generation side, hardware in advance of the theory. The theory is so sketchy that manifestations of these effects are being pulled from wherever, let's call it the vacuum of space or the zero-point field. But there is no good fundamental theory underpinning where these effects are coming from.
Right.
And I think that what's going to happen is eventually science theory is going to catch up with the hardware and will map out what's going on here. But for the moment, we are really, to a very large degree, swimming in the dark.
All right. Well, one quick question I think we have time for. Hello there. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nick Cook. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. It's a true pleasure.
Thank you.
Yes, I have a question regarding the German technology. I'm a researcher myself, and I've been dabbling in micromagnetic energy. And my name is Thurston. I'm from California, Southern California.
Yes, sir.
And I found a stunning similarity to what's going on politically and what's going on with the German technology with the Third Reich trying to take over the world utilizing such a thing.
Well,
again, what's going on right now?
Yeah, again, I guess there is a lot of old information to be gleaned about what the Germans were doing. I don't know if it's all out by now or not, Nick.
By no means all out. My research, and again, this will be detailed in the follow-up book. Let's call it the Humphrey 0.2. Is going to, I hope, really kind of take the lid off that very compartmentalized, very secret, and but very fundamental research into some of the things that we're talking about here. Advanced propulsion. They were into directed energy weapons, but all of this activity was contained in an environment not dissimilar to the way that the black world has been set up today, in a very highly compartmentalized way, very difficult to access, and in a way that history has not documented.
All right.
And that's where I'm going to be going.
All right, good. Nick, meanwhile, your first book is still available, isn't it?
Very much so, and I'm delighted to say doing brisk business, which is very gratifying.
So there you are, folks. If you want to know more about what you've heard, Amazon.com or whatever, and the Hunt for 0.0, and coming out soon. About how soon, Nick?
I hope to have it out next year.
Next year?
Yep, it'll be, I mean, the research is, as I said, about 95% done, but we hope that the book will be available next year.
You don't really have a title, do you?
I've got a number of titles that I'm working on, that are working titles, but there's nothing I'm putting out yet.
Okay, my friend, good luck and good night.
Thanks, Art, very much.
Take care. That's it, folks. It's been a wonderful weekend. Thank you all from the high desert this night, this weekend. It's good night. Crystal Gale has always just the right words.
Good night in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. Magical journey will take us on a ride. Filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it till tomorrow?